Welcome back to our study of Judges. We are in chapter 16, and we had just read verse 17, where Samson had told Delilah everything that was in his heart and told her that he had had been a Nazarite unto God from his mother's womb, that if his head were shaven, then he would lose his strength and he'd be just like any other man. Now in verse 18...
Do you want to go back and read that about his parents?
Yeah, let's do that. Before we read what happened here with Delilah, I just want to remind you, if you all turn back to chapter 14 and look at verse 4, if you'll remember, the first time Samson told his parents that he wanted to marry this Philistine woman, in verse 4 we get some insight here. But his father and his mother knew not that it was of the Lord that he sought an occasion against the Philistines. So just keep that in mind here, that God has a bigger plan and that he is seeking to bring judgment on these Philistines. And so even though we were talking about some of the mistakes that we saw, from our perspective, that Samson had made, there's a bigger picture here. Okay? So, verse 18. And when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called for the lords of the Philistines, saying, "Come up this once, for he has showed me all his heart." Then the lords of the Philistines came up unto her and brought money in their hand. And she made him sleep upon her knees, and she called for a man, and she caused him to shave off the 7 locks of his head, and she began to afflict him, and his strength went from him. And she said, "The Philistines be upon thee, Samson." And he awoke out of his sleep and said, "I will go out as at other times before, and shake myself." And he wist not that the Lord was departed from him.
Now, if you look at this, he's told her, if I break the Nazarite vow by shaving my head, is basically what he's saying. And she... evidently, the way he presented that, she's convinced that this is right. And so she says to these lords of the Philistines, these leaders, "Come up this once. He's borne his heart with me." And then it says she caused him to sleep. Now, I think about this, if someone is... shaving the 7 locks off your hair, whatever, is there something that she's given him to help him sleep? You know what I mean? I think if somebody started cutting my hair, I'd wake up. You know what I mean? Even though I don't have all that much. still yet, I think it would get my attention. And then when he does... So when she wakes him up and says, "The Philistines are on you," he's not conscious of the fact, evidently, that his hair's been cut off. And he just said, "Well, I'm going to go out and do like I've always done. You know, I'll wear these guys out." But it doesn't work that way for him, because he broke his vow with God. He's revealed what would take away his strength. And now he no longer has the strength to stand against the enemy. Some caution in all this. You understand? You don't tell everything you know. Okay?
Very good. Some things are just none of people's business. But the Philistines took him and put out his eyes, and brought him down to Gaza, and bound him with fetters of brass, and he did grind in the prison house. Howbeit, the hair of his head began to grow again after he was shaven.
Okay, let's look at this, all right? So once they capture him, they blind him, they put out his eyes, and then he's humiliated now by just being a slave, grinding in the mill. You go from a man greatly feared to a man that's mocked because he broke his vow with God.
Then the lords of the Philistines gathered them together for to offer a great sacrifice unto Dagon their god, and to rejoice. For they said, our God hath delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hand.
Now, I think this is a key thing here, as we read on, of why it resulted the way it did. The Philistines are boasting in the fact that their god, false god, Dagon, you understand, one that's an idol. They said that their God had delivered Samson into their hand. No, Samson himself delivered himself into their hand by breaking his vow with God. Okay.
And when the people saw him, they praised their God, for they said, our God hath delivered it. Our God hath delivered into our hands our enemy and the destroyer of our country, which slew many of us. And it came to pass, when their hearts were merry, that they said, call for Samson, that he may make us sport. And they called for Samson out of the prison house, and he made them sport, and they set him between the pillars.
In other words, they're making fun of him. He's out there, he's blind, and he's brought forth so they can mock him and make fun of him, okay?
And Samson said unto the lad that held him by the hand, suffer me that I may feel the pillars whereupon the house standeth, that I may lean upon them.
Now note this. He has to have somebody to lead him around now, doesn't he? It's the lad. It's the lad leading him around because he can't see where he's going.
Now the house was full of men and women, and all the lords of the Philistines were there. And there upon the roof about 3,000 men and women that beheld while Samson made sport. And Samson called unto the Lord and said, O Lord God, remember me, I pray thee, and strengthen me, I pray thee, only this once, O God, that I may be at once avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes.
So here they've gathered together. Now note this, it says that all the lords of the Philistines, in other words, these leaders of these various cities of the Philistines, have all gathered together to watch this mockery. And there are many people, the house is full of both men and women. He says there's about 3,000 men and women, and they're all watching and making fun of Samson, and Samson just calls out to the Lord, asking the Lord to restore his strength, basically, and let me be avenged of my eyes that they've put out. I'm just going to ask you for this one time, okay? One time.
And Samson took hold of the two middle pillars upon which the house stood, and on which it was borne up, of the one with his right hand, and of the other with his left. And Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. And he bowed himself with all his might, and the house fell upon the lords, and upon all the people that were therein. So the dead which he slew at his death was more than they which he slew in his life.
If you think about this, the lad leading him. I mean, he didn't have a clue, right? Samson's lost his strength, and now they're making fun of him. Samson says, just tell me where the pillars of the house are. What's supporting this place? And the lad just shows him, and so evidently these are close enough together that he can push against both of them, or whatever, at the same time. And I say both. I'm assuming that's what it was, the two middle pillars, okay. And then he asks the Lord, just give me my strength and let me die with them. In other words, I want to push this house down. It falls on me, kills me, but we're going to execute judgment on his enemies, okay? And so that's exactly what happened. And interesting, it says he killed more in his death than he did in his life. Now, he says 3,000 here. We know that on that one occasion he killed 1,000, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's evidently many more because of all that he had done damage to prior to this, but more in his death than in his lifetime, okay?
Then his brethren and all the house of his father came down and took him and brought him up and buried him between Zerah and Eshtaol in the burying place of Manoah his father, and he judged Israel 20 years.
So it appears, where it says brethren, I would translate that relatives, okay? So his relatives of the house of his father came down and took him and buried him with his father. So obviously his father is already dead. You understand, if you remember at the very beginning, Manoah's wife was barren. Mm-hmm. And so they're older when they have Samson. And so he's judged Israel, it says, 20 years, right? I don't know how old they are. We're not given that age. But it appears that they're already dead. We know his father was because it said they buried him. And so he's got his request, God honored him, to where he actually kills more in his death than he does in his life.
Chapter 17.
This is sort of a parenthetical here, in a way, because we're not focusing on a particular person executing judgment, but the judgment is executed because of a particular person. Okay.
I need to go back. If y'all will excuse me, I neglected to review a test question before we get into this.
Go ahead.
This chapter. The cutting of Samson's hair was not the first violation of his blank vow. What kind of vow? Nazarite vow. Very good. I'm sorry to have to interject that. So, let's get back to this parenthetical, if you will. Chapter 17. And there was a man of Mount Ephraim, whose name was Micah. And he said unto his mother, the 1,100 shekels of silver that were taken from thee, about which thou cursest and spakest of also in my ears, behold, the silver is with me. I took it, and his mother said, blessed be thou of the Lord, my son.
Now, this is an interesting statement. Here's a guy confessing to stealing money from his mother, right? Mm-hmm. And so, curse is not like profanity that we would call cussing, okay? But a curse is to pronounce something derogatory against a person, right? So he said, I took the money that you cursed about, that you put a curse on. Go ahead and read the next verse. I'm going to be getting ahead of you.
And when he had restored the 1,100 shekels of silver to his mother said, I had wholly dedicated the silver unto the Lord from my hand for my son, to make a graven image and a molten image. Now, therefore, I will restore it unto thee.
So now she's saying, blessed is my son, right? Sort of a double standard here now. You know, cursed is a person that took it. Now blessed is my son that he's returned it. Now, this is so interesting. She said, look, I laid this up so I could dedicate it to the Lord by making an idol. Mm. Well, obviously somebody's not real aware of the first commandment. And the second, you understand, no other gods, no graven images, and all this, no molten images. And so, anyway, he's given this money back to her for her to make an idol.
You see that in verse 4. Yet he restored the money unto his mother, and his mother took 200 shekels of silver and gave them to the founder, who made thereof a graven image and a molten image, and they were in the house of Micah.
Not, she didn't take all the money, but 200, okay, shekels of silver, and she has the founder to make a molten image for her, and then puts it in the house of Micah.
And the man Micah had a house of gods, and made an ephod and a teraphim, and consecrated one of his sons, who became his priest.
Now, you think about this. I mean, it doesn't make sense to us, does it? But here's a person that knows that a founder has fabricated this idol. He has other idols in his house. And then, you know, if you go worship, you have to have a priest. So he just consecrates one of his sons to be the priest.
Verse 6, in those days there was no king in Israel, but every man did that which was right in his own eyes.
There's the kicker right there. Mm-hmm. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes, because they had no leader. They did not have a king. They did not have one to hold them in check. Okay?
This is going to be a test question, by the way. You're going to want to remember that. When there was no appointed leadership in Israel, everyone did what was right in his own eyes. You know, I think about how important leadership is. We were talking with Romaine earlier this evening about a situation in another place that has no leadership or incorrect leadership, ungodly leadership, and what an impact that has on the people.
Negative.
Negative impact, for sure. Verse 7, and there was a young man out of Bethlehem, Judah, of the family of Judah, who was a Levite, and he sojourned there. And the man departed out of the city from Bethlehem, Judah, to sojourn where he could find a place, and he came to Mount Ephraim, to the house of Micah, as he journeyed. And Micah said unto him, whence comest thou? And he said unto him, I am a Levite of Bethlehem, Judah, and I go to sojourn where I may find a place. And Micah said unto him, dwell with me, and be unto me a father and a priest, and I will give thee 10 shekels of silver by the year, and a suit of apparel, and thy victuals. So the Levite went in.
So it's better to have someone that God had ordained, of, you know, the tribe of Levi was set apart to minister before the Lord. So when this Levite comes by, you know, traveling, and this man sees and learns that this guy's a Levite, well, that'll be better to have him as my priest than my son. Because, you know, this is going to really be a blessing to me. It's interesting how people can think, even though they're in to idol worship, even though they're in the ungodly practices, they think that by using someone that God has set apart, it's going to be a blessing to them. And so the guy is for sale. Sounds like a pretty good deal. I'm going to get this money. I'm going to get clothes. Yeah, I'll just stay here.
It's shocking the amount to me. 10 shekels of silver by the year. They started with 1,100, remember? Verse 11, and the Levite was content to dwell with the man, and the young man was unto him as one of his sons. And Micah consecrated the Levite, and the young man became his priest, and was in the house of Micah. Then said Micah, Now know I that the Lord will do me good, seeing I have a Levite to my priest.
See how perverted our thinking can be? Now, the interesting thing is, if you really look at the depth of this, he gets this guy, the Levite, Micah gets the Levite into his house, consecrates him as a priest, and then this Levite becomes like one of his sons. You know what that means? He has control of him. Right?
Yes.
In other words, he's going to do what I say to do because I'm paying him to do it, right? And so then he has this mindset, well, because I've hired this Levite and got this Levite living with me, well, God's going to bless me now, even though I'm into idol worship. Amazing, isn't it? Well, we do some things just as stupid.
Here's what we want you to understand about this. This account of Micah's idol has been recorded to show the degradation of the nation of Israel, how far they had moved from God. It's not God's approval of Micah's action. So this was not recorded was God approving of Micah's actions. And we want you to know this is going to be on your test.
Well, actually, you're going to see, as we read along, you're going to see that it actually turns against him. His mama's curse might have come to pass.
Did I mention that was a test question, what I just mentioned earlier? Okay, very good. Chapter 18. In those days there was no king in Israel, and in those days the tribe of the Danites sought them an inheritance to dwell in. For unto that day all their inheritance had not fallen unto them among the tribes of Israel.
Notice they had not taken what God had given them. You follow what's being said here? They've been negligent in taking the territory that had been given to them. So Dan, the tribe of Dan, had not taken all the territory that God had given them. And so they're looking for an inheritance to dwell in among all the tribes of Israel.
And the children of Dan sent of their family 5 men from their coast, men of valor, from Zorah and from Eshtaol, to spy out the land and to search it. And they said unto them, go, search the land. Who, when they came to Mount Ephraim, to the house of Micah, they lodged there.
So you have a 5-man reconnaissance team. You know, they're out looking. They're out gathering information. They're trying to find property. They're out there so as spies, okay? And so these men come to Micah's house. And he let them lodge there.
And when they were by the house of Micah, they knew the voice of the young man, the Levite. And they turned in thither and said unto him, who brought thee hither? And what makest thou in this place? And what hast thou here?
Now, it's interesting. They knew this guy.
Yeah.
They recognized his voice. And so, what are you doing here?
And he said unto them, thus and thus dealt my Micah with me and hath hired me, and I am his priest.
So he answers the question.
Mm-hmm.
Michael made me an offer I couldn't refuse, so I'm here in his house acting as a priest for him.
And they said unto him, Ask counsel, we pray thee, of God, that we may know whether our way, which we go, shall be prosperous. And the priest said unto them, Go in peace, before the Lord is your way wherein you go.
Now, this is an interesting thing. He gives them correct counsel. Okay? Even though this is as mixed up as a can of worms. But have you ever thought about how God used Caiaphas to prophesy? Saul, when he's trying to kill David, the Spirit of the Lord comes on him, prophesies his soldiers, they prophesy to prevent them from doing damage. This is why Isaiah says his ways are higher than ours. His thoughts are superior to our thoughts. God has a plan. And so God's using this. So these Danites are out to take territory. And so this guy says, God's with you. Go get it.
Verse 7. Then the five men departed and came to Laish, and they saw the people that were therein, how they dwelt careless after the manner of the Zidonians, quiet and secure, and there was no magistrate in the land, that they might put them to shame in anything. And they were far from the Zidonians and had no business with any man. And they
came. Now, here's something that you need to glean the principle out of. These people at Laish, they don't have anybody to hold them in check. Every man's doing his own thing. And so they have no protection. They have no security. And everybody's just living it up, so to speak. You know, this says they dwelt careless,
mm-hmm.
right? Which was after the manner of the Sidonians. They didn't have a magistrate. In other words, there's no law and order in the land. Now, just think about it. You remove the law and order out of the land, you got a mess.
Verse 8, And they came unto their brethren, to Zorah and to Eshtaol, and their brethren said unto them, What say ye? And they said, Arise, that we may go up against them, for we have seen the land, and behold, it is very good. And are ye still? Be not slothful to go, and to enter to possess the land.
So when they get back, they said, All right, what's your report, you know? And they said, let's go. Let's go get them. Don't sit still here. Don't be slothful. In other words, don't procrastinate. Let's go possess the land.
When ye go, ye shall come unto a people secure and to a large land, for God hath given it into your hands, a place where there is no want of anything that is in the earth.
We found the place. God's given it to us. And you have no lack there. So let's go take the land.
And there went from thence of the family of the Danites, out of Zorah and out of Eshtaol, 600 men appointed with weapons of war.
So this is an army, a small army of 600 men, okay?
And they went up and pitched in Kirjath Jearim in Judah, wherefore they called that place Mahanadan unto this day. Behold, it is behind Kirjath-Jearim. And they passed thence unto Mount Ephraim, and came unto the house of Micah. Then answered the five men that went to spy out the country of Laish, and said unto their brethren, Do ye know that there is in these houses an ephod, and a teraphim, and a graven image, and a molten image? Now, therefore, consider what ye have to do.
Remember, the ephod is what was used to seek the counsel of the Lord, okay? And so, obviously, the five that had done the reconnaissance is with this army that's out there, And then they tell them, look, we've been to this place. Let me tell you what's in this place. And so you know what to do.
And they turned thitherward and came to the house of the young man, the Levite, even unto the house of Micah, and saluted him. And the six...
greeted him.
Mm-hmm. And the 600 men appointed with their weapons of war, which were of the children of Dan, stood by the entering of the gate. And the 5 men that went to spy out the land went up and came in thither and took the graven image and the ephod and the teraphim and the molten image. And the priest stood in the entering of the gate with the 600 men that were appointed with weapons of war.
So while these 600 men are at the gate, then this Levite goes out there. He's with them, and the 5 men go in there, and they start taking everything. You know, they take the idol, they take the ephod and all that.
And these went into Micah's house and fetched the carved image, the ephod, and the teraphim, and the molten image. Then said the priest unto them, what do ye?
What are you doing? Yeah, you understand? What are you guys doing?
And they said unto him, hold thy peace, lay thy hand upon thy mouth, and go with us. And be to us a father and a priest. Is it better for thee to be a priest unto the house of one man, or that thou be a priest unto a tribe and a family in Israel?
So now they're making him a better offer than what he had. Don't say anything. Just think about this. Which is better, being one man's priest or being a priest for an entire tribe? Come on, go with us. We'll take the stuff. You come on, go with us.
And the priest's heart was glad, and he took the ephod and the teraphim and the graven image and went in the midst of the people.
His heart was glad. That may sound like a pretty good deal to him, right? And so he goes with them.
And they turned and departed and put the little ones and the cattle and the carriage before them.
Now, this gives you some insight, because it's not just an army of men. It's their family and their possessions that they have with them. Carriage is baggage, okay? And so understand what their purpose is. Their purpose is to find territory to live in. So they're bringing everything they own to find this place to live in. They're relocating. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
And just keep that in mind. This whole tribe here, okay?
And when they were a good way from the house of Micah, the men that were in the houses near to Micah's house were gathered together and overtook the children of Dan.
So now when Micah realized what's going on, you know, they've stole his stuff. And not only that, they've taken his priest. So he goes out and he's going to confront them, you know, and to get back his possessions. This is why I said it could be that his mother's curse came to pass, because he lost it all, didn't he? Well, I mean, he just lost ungodly stuff, but he was putting a lot of emphasis on the ungodly stuff.
And they cried unto the children of Dan, and they turned their faces and said unto Micah, what aileth thee, that thou comest with such a company?
So Micah gathered his little army together, a small one, and he came again. What's wrong with you? Why are you following us?
And he said, ye have taken away my gods, which I made, and the priests.
Which I made.
And ye are gone away, and what have I more? And what is that ye say unto me, what aileth thee?
So, you asking, what's wrong with me? Let me tell you what's wrong with me. You just stole my gods that I made. I think about Zerubbabel's daddy, Gideon's daddy. You know, when they come out there, they're going to kill him for destroying the god. Wait a minute. Can't Baal defend himself? If Baal can't defend himself, then he's not a god anyway, is he? Well, if these gods that they took can't defend themselves, they must not be gods either, right?
And the children of Dan said unto him, Let not thy voice be heard among us, lest angry fellows run upon thee, and thou lose thy life with the lives of thy household.
So they're giving them a warning here.
Yeah.
They just don't turn and kill them. They just give them a warning. Shut up. We don't want to hear it. And if you keep running your mouth, we're going to kill you. That's the essence of it. That's peace language, okay? You get the message, right? Okay.
We got it. And the children of Dan went their way, and when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and went back unto his house.
He just came to the conclusion that it's better to go home empty than to be killed and not go home. Pretty wise decision, right? Okay. Our time's up here, so we'll stop, and we'll pick back up with this in our next session, okay, verse 27.
Okay.
I hope you don't mind. Thank you that you bless us indeed. Gin large our territory. Your hands with us to keep us from evil so that we do not cause pain. You bless us and keep us. You make your face shine upon us. You're gracious unto us. You lift up your countenance upon us and you give us peace. So, Lord, we invite you to rise up, let your enemies be scattered, and those who hate you flee before you. Amen. Mm-hmm. You guys have a great rest of the week.